Welcome to the audiobook version of If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand, a powerful jolt of entrepreneurial energy and wisdom. Read by the author, Dr. Joel Freeman. Please join Joel as he starts the book, reading the dedication of the book to Fred and Flora Weeks, entitled Lessons from a Tractor.
I worked for 2 summers on Fred and Flora's dairy farm in Litchfield, Maine in 1968 and 1969 when I was 14 and 15 years of age. Every day, I helped carry and record the weight of milk from each cow in large pails during the milkings at 4 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The late mornings and early afternoons were spent haying, gardening, cutting timber, or general farm work. The first summer, I received $10 a week plus room and board. And the next summer, I got a raise, $25 a week. Now, Fred, he was an easygoing man, a remarkable mentor in his own way. I remember one day I got the harebrained idea that I would spruce up the old grease-it-before-you-use-it farm-all tractor. Big wheels on the rear and small tires about a foot apart on the front, and it was begging for a coat of paint. So I asked if I could slap some paint on it. Fred explained that the painting process involves sanding the rust off before applying the paint. I nodded in agreement. It sounded simple enough. Later that day, he drove me down to the local hardware store and bought some sandpaper, a brush, and a gallon of fire engine red high-gloss oil paint. And I was thrilled. When we got home, I started on the easiest part of the tractor. That was the large area covering the top and the front of the engine. And it was easily accessible and relatively rust-free. The sandpaper part of the job was a snap. Ha, that paint, it went on smoothly. It glistened in the afternoon sun. I backed off a few yards, surveying the scene. Then I did a full 360. I looked at the rust all over the spokes on the wheels and on the other parts of the tractor with hard-to-reach pits and ridges. It looked nasty and grungy, with grime, cow manure caked over some of the rust. There was no way I was going to hug those wheels to get off all that rust. At that moment, I had an epiphany. I decided that I was done with the job. I went to the barn, found the turpentine, cleaned the brush. In my mind, the tractor looked fine. Heck, it was only going to be used out in the field. We're not talking about a cool-looking chick magnet used to cruise the main street on Saturday evenings. No big deal. It's certainly better off than it was. It's a tractor, for Pete's sake. The next day, I went about my business. Fred let a couple of days pass without saying anything about the half-done paint job. I guess he finally figured out that I was done with the tractor, but he wanted to verify it with me. "Joel, when are you planning to finish painting the tractor?" he ventured. I'm done," I responded. I figured that I took the job as far as I could take it." That seemed like a logical response any rational person would understand. I mean, look at them nasty spokes, would you? It was the only time I ever saw Fred get mad. I mean, steam was coming out of his shirt collar. He put the fear of God in me. He never raised his voice, but there was an unmistakable, tight-jawed, eye-piercing Clint Eastwood authority. In controlled, firm manner, he said, "Joel, you will finish what you started. Now go get the sandpaper and start working on the wheels." Now, I experienced more than just hard work on that early-to-bed, early-to-rise summer. I learned that it was important to complete a job that I had started, no matter how difficult or boring. I now finish some things that I shouldn't have started in the first place, but that's beside the point. Flora died a few years ago, and Fred died September 26, 2005. He was 90. I used to call him at least once a month, sometimes more, just to see how he was doing. I miss both of them, but especially Fred. And even though I finally cleared his phone number out of my cell phone's memory the other day, his legacy lives on. So here's to the Freds and the Floras of the world. Chapter 1, A Most Fantastic View, Fog Permitting. Have you ever tried to navigate your way through a dense fog or a blinding blizzard? It can be both dangerous and exciting. Growing up in Alberta, Canada, I've encountered a few of those can't see my outstretched hand in front of me type of blizzards. I have also driven and walked in dense fog on the coast of Maine. Both types of experiences are challenging on many levels. You're lucky if you can even see a few feet ahead of you at any given time. An entrepreneurial pursuit is somewhat similar. Forward motion in a thick fog. The kind of fog that seems to weigh you down, though it weighs nothing. An immensely oppressive weight of lightness. You cautiously pace yourself, feeling your way toward an unformed shadow of an idea that initially looked like a promising expenditure of your time, energy, and money. You know what it's supposed to look like. You once had a fantastic view of it, whatever it is. But when you arrive, what you currently see is really desolate and troublesome, what could be called destination sickness. The best laid business plans can become fuzzy and out of focus, or can even seem to vanish, may even seem like you have squandered your limited reserves of time, energy, and finances. You are engaging in a process of going down alleys to see if they go anywhere or if they're blind. Kind of like a research scientist propelled by the vision of developing the cure for a ravaging disease, or an inventor trying to conceive of something that no other human on the planet has ever imagined. Wernher von Braun, one of the most important rocket developers and an early champion of space exploration, said, "Research is what I'm doing when I don't know what I'm doing." Have you ever felt that way? Some people just do not have the stomach for this kind of startup work. Walking in a fog or going down blind alleys. They want a secure and settled environment, complete with benefits, retirement plan, insurance, all systems and protocol in place. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but you get the picture. Entrepreneurial pursuits aren't for everybody. If every person stepped out on his or her own, corporations would falter and a nation's economy would suffer. Working in a corporate environment is a noble profession. In fact, your startup business may grow up to become a secure and settled corporation someday, complete with benefits, retirement plan, insurance, and all systems and protocol in place. It's just that some people acquire an inconvenient, somewhat maddening entrepreneurial itch that needs scratching. And it's an itch that just won't go away with one or two scratches. By the way, are you feeling that itch? If so, this book is for you. By the way, people do not need to exit their day jobs to become entrepreneurs. Most are evening executives, midnight moguls, and/or weekend merchants, selling stuff on eBay or some other home-based business that brings in extra cash. Some of those ventures may even become substantial enough a few years from now, inviting that individual to flirt with the idea of quitting his or her day job. Now, I'm a professional speaker, an author, corporate trainer, consultant, and a confidential critical incident debriefing coach of senior executives, professional athletes, and entertainers. I realize that much of what I'm communicating in this book will reflect my vocation and may have special appeal to performers, seminar facilitators, executive coaches, agents, corporate trainers, writers, filmmakers, salespeople, clergy, financial planners, professional speakers, business consultants, franchise owners, graphic artists, insurance brokers, entertainers, magicians, and so on. If you don't hear your profession listed, don't worry. It's about most professions or products requiring savvy marketing. Understanding the internal world of an entrepreneur is a primary focus of this book, which transcends professions. After reading an early version of this manuscript, a friend commented, "This book is like condensed milk. A rich concentration of wisdom with a diversity of application." Now, I certainly hope you find that to be true, especially the diversity of application. My goal is to give skills and tools to individuals who are engaged in an entrepreneurial pursuit on a limited budget. Now, you possess the connectors to apply the contents of this book to the specifics of your life. Now, who will benefit the most from this book? What's those who are in the early to mid stages of ramping up a new business? It's kind of like eating chicken. Eat the meat and throw away the bones. But if you do hit a bone, something that doesn't quite fit your situation, keep chewing around that bone. Perhaps there'll be some meat on the other side. Business professionals considering whether or not this book is relevant may want to listen to the seasoned veteran Les Brown, where he said, "This book will change the way I will do business." Now, if you implement just a few ideas from this book, you should be able to add at least $10,000 to your bank account within 6 months. I can't guarantee what I just stated, because I don't know your credibility. I don't know your telephone skills. I know nothing about the way you present yourself to others. I don't know your work ethic or if your word is your bond. Now, that's on your shoulders. Wear it well. Regardless of your passion, a startup business is kind of like building an addition to your home. A, it's messier than previously anticipated. B, it takes longer than previously anticipated. C, it's more expensive than previously anticipated. What you're listening to in this audiobook has been formed in the crucible of painful experience. And it works, but not without a few failures along the way. Truth be told, I have learned more from my failures than from my successes. In fact, I'm writing this very honest and open book as a wounded healer, providing some skills, some tools, and some creative ideas for charting a course through the dense fog. I will not waste your time keeping the fluff factor down to 1.75%. Each chapter is to the point. No bull, no hype. It is my hope that you hear the enthusiasm in my words. We generally hear or read the words, but it's the music that really captures us. And I trust that you hear the music, the passion, as you make your way through this audiobook. Most of all, I hope this is a fun experience for you. Now let's look at all of this in terms of mixing colors. If creative vision is yellow and practical application is blue, we're looking for green. And everybody loves green. It transcends ethnicity, gender, religion, generation, and class. An alternative title of this book could be, "If Nobody Loves You, Let's Mix Up Something Green." Executive Concepts. At the top of the Ballinskellig's Bay, on the southwesterly edge of the peninsula of County Kerry, Ireland, there is a pub with a sign boasting, "Ireland's Most Fantastic View," fog permitting. Even though before you is one of the most panoramic views to behold, the elements involved in creating the weather seem to conspire together, keeping tourists from getting a clear view of the beautiful sight, hence the brisk sale of scenic postcards. Now, what's my point? The presence of the fog doesn't nullify the existence of the entrepreneurial vision you know is real. Take a mental picture of the vision you've developed for your business. Keep that mental snapshot clear in your mind's eye, kind of like a panoramic postcard image. And don't doubt in the fog what you know you saw on a clear day. Kind of like what Mark Twain said. You can't depend upon your judgment when your imagination is out of focus. Expect the fog to come in. Plan for it and use it to your advantage as an opportunity for internal growth. Personal character and perseverance are built when the fog comes in, not when the view is clear. Starting and developing a new business is important, but even more meaningful is who you become in the process. And it may even sound a little corny, but work with me on this. Like the previously mentioned pub in Ireland, remind yourself and others about the panoramic vision of your business by placing a small sticky note above your computer screen with the name of your business and then these words, "A most fantastic view, fog permitting." And if it makes you feel any better, I just looked up a few moments ago and saw the sticky note above my computer screen, designed to remind me of this section. See, we're bonding already. Before we get through this audiobook together, we'll be getting along famously. Creative thinking for personal reflection and or group discussion. Number one, what is the vision and mission of your business? Write everything down, getting an even clearer image of the panoramic view before you. Number two, describe and define the fog as it relates to your entrepreneurial pursuit. In other words, what makes you confused and perplexed, unclear about the next steps as you attempt to implement your vision and mission? Number three, Joseph Conrad once stated, "It's not the clear-sighted who rule the world. Great achievements are accomplished in a blessed, warm fog." Now, I suspect that no one reading this book is actually trying to rule the world. But what is your perspective on what this famous author is communicating within the context of the theme of this book? Number four, what are some advancing through the fog strategies that can lead to great achievements when, not if, the thick fog settles in around you and your business pursuit? With pen in hand, identify specific practical concepts you can implement addressing five layers, listing at least three tactics per layer. Let's officially call it the firm's fog strategy. Say that fast five times. Number one, financial. Two, emotional. Three, relational. Four, mental. Five, spiritual. And as you embark upon this listening experience, what are you hoping to receive from this book? Make a list of your expectations and check it when we're finished to see if I've hit the bullseye for you. Grab a cup of coffee, kick off your shoes, and let's move on to the next chapter together with your internet-capable computer close by. Chapter 2, Dinner and a Book. Verbal snapshot. I'm in an Italian restaurant, munching on some chicken Alfredo, sitting across from two people my wife and I have known for years, and we're reminiscing about old times. The conversation dies down for a moment. I look across the table with my fork midway between the plate and my mouth, and I ask, So, Loretta, what are your plans for the future? She lifted her head with a surprised look. Well, what do you mean, Joel? Oh, I don't know. Your daughters are all grown up, and you're ready for a new chapter in your life. And I'm wondering how you want to fill that new chapter. I'm not sure, she stammered. I really haven't given it much thought. Now, Loretta has a unique gift from God. If it were possible to shatter a crystal goblet with a high note, this woman could do it. Classically trained, she has traveled extensively through various parts of the world, participating in operatic performances. She has taught in prestigious schools like Duke Ellington School of Music, Baltimore School for the Arts, and Peabody. In spite of all the successes, she has been handed some very difficult situations. A widow with three lovely grown daughters, Loretta has confronted much personal heartache and a number of vocational obstacles. She is a survivor. Throughout the next 25 to 30 minutes, I laid out a practical action plan for her to start a new one-woman show, specifically built around her training and her passion. Here's the concept in a nutshell. An African-American woman, Loretta will perform some of the old Negro spirituals at corporate functions, conventions, and Black history events for government agencies, churches, educational institutions, and family reunions. These performances will be both educational and inspirational. The organizations that hire her will be blown away by the experience. In fact, I can see her being sponsored by a large corporation to do this all over the world. Can you see it? The lights will dim. She'll turn her back to the audience, putting on vintage clothing, a hat, a shawl, transformation. When she turns around, the single spotlight hits her. She will become Harriet Tubman, or Phyllis Wheatley, or Sojourner Truth, or Minnie Tate, one of the original Fisk University Jubilee singers. After dramatically providing the historical backdrop, she will sing a song that will chill you down to the very marrow of your bones. After a short pause, I added, "What you have just heard is about $10,000 worth of advice, and I am willing to help you implement every step." I could see the excitement dancing in her eyes. While driving home from the restaurant, I began to think about the many people who reach out to me for business and marketing advice. When could I carve out the time to place this information in written and audio form so that others could benefit? The book you are now listening to is the result. In fact, I want to write and to speak in such a way that you will almost feel like you're sitting at the next table eavesdropping on what I told Loretta. Perhaps you can glean some basic information for your own entrepreneurial pursuit. I sure hope so. Let's see. Weren't you the one who ordered the chicken pasta? There ain't no bones in that dish. Just pretend you're not listening, but scoot your chair over just a bit closer and tilt your head just a little to the right. Executive concepts. Eulogize the mundane things of life. Do not overlook the obvious. You see, a simple dinner conversation became the seed concept for a book. This book. The book you're listening to right now. Now, what is the normal stuff in your life that can spark a new idea? Frankly, this book will free up my time, allowing me to become more productive. I generously give hours every month helping people who have specific questions about building their entrepreneurial dreams. This book will permit me to do other things. How? Whenever someone calls or emails for business advice, I will gently suggest that he or she should first read or listen to this book. I can then say goodbye and go back to what I was doing before the phone rang or the email was answered. If, after reading or listening to the book, the caller still has some unanswered questions, I will gladly resume the conversation. This strategy will help me superintend and multiply my time while still helping people, which is very important to me. Vision rich, cash poor. Learn a new language. Assuming that you speak English pretty good, you may want to consider learning Spanish, Chinese, French, or Portuguese. It will also give you access to many more people and will also expand your future business options, regardless where you live in the world. Take a look at the changing demographics in your area, along with the populations that will be expanding in the next 20 years, and personally plan for the cultural realities of the future, your future. Creative thinking for personal reflection and/or group discussion. Number one, in what ways is your counsel in demand? Identify those categories, writing them down on paper. How much time do you spend per month freely helping people in each category? Number two, what are the ways you can free up yourself so that you can remain focused on the entrepreneurial things about which you are passionate and still help people? Number three, of those who fail, most fail not realizing how close they were to success. I don't know the author of that statement, but what does that statement mean to you? Are there any personal stories or experiences that you know of that can illustrate this quotation? Chapter 3, Death of a Vision. A child is conceived in ecstasy, but birthed with much pain. Now, isn't that the way it is with life? Ideas and dreams tumble into our consciousness with great enthusiasm and passion. But the implementation of those concepts invites suffering and pain. We all desire character traits like stick-to-itiveness and flexibility and generosity and perseverance and integrity. We want to say what we mean and mean what we say. Giving birth to an entrepreneurial dream will test the very seams of your soul. I can't remember where I heard it, but there are 5 stages of the growth of a vision, and they all begin with the letter D, and I've also embellished them just a wee bit. Number one, dream. Exhilaration, excitement, skyrockets at night. Number two, discover the overall purpose of your vision. Big picture thinking, finding a mentor. Number three, develop the strategic aspects of your vision. Business plan, financing, equipment, technology, connecting with the people who can help. Number four, delegate. Systems, protocol, insurance, retirement plans, employees. Number five, disappear. Backing off, letting others fail and/or succeed on their own. Succession. Whoever came up with these stages knew what he or she was talking about. And by the way, it is the non-participants who generally get the credit in the end. But if you don't care who gets the credit, do the details with dignity and integrity. Now, after carefully thinking about this, I'd like to add another stage. Number six, death of a vision. Disillusionment, wanting to quit, more questions than answers. Now, I'm not sure where this category appears in the stages mentioned previously, but it's a necessary part of the overall purpose of the vision. And here's the fun part. Sometimes the death stage visits a few times during the growth process. Enhancing your personal success in 30 days. Self-coaching questions. Wrestle with each question over the next 30 days, writing the answers to each of the following questions on a separate pad of paper. It's worth the struggle. Pause and reflect after each question. You'll get out of it what you put into it. When you have a plan, experience the difference a month can make. Day 1. Number 1. What contributes most to your current life success? What part does gratitude play in your daily thoughts and actions? Number 2. What, if anything, is holding you back in your life? How do you know this to be true, and how are you going to deal with it? Day 2. Number 3. What are your weakest job skills? How do you know this to be true? Number 4. What are your strongest job skills, and how do you know this to be true? Day 3. Number 5. Career-wise, where can you go from here, and how will you get there? Number 6. What would your closest friend say are your hidden talents? Take a guess. Day 4. Number 7. At a deep level of yourself, in your soul, what are you trying to accomplish in your life? Number 8. What resides in the realm of your shadow, the things you are trying to hide from yourself and others? It has been said that to be alive is to be addicted in some way. If this is true, what are your socially acceptable and socially unacceptable addictions, and how life-controlling are they? In what specific ways? Day 5. Number 9. What is the most influential book you have ever read? List the ways this book has changed your perspective on life, and send it to the author if he or she is still alive. Number 10. Are you happy with your current lifestyle? Why or why not?
Thank you for joining Joel Freeman during the reading of the audiobook version of If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand. If you would like more information about this book, please visit the website createthedemand.com. If you would like to schedule Dr. Freeman for a keynote speaking engagement or a leadership seminar at your organization, please call 410-729-7800 or go to the website joelspeaksrealgood.com.